Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bethany Gilbert, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Coram Deo Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about the decline in American church membership.
Dusty, Chris, welcome back to the podcast today.
Hey, it's good to be back. You guys talked about Bob Inc. without me.
I know.
I'm sad.
I mean, we can't, when you're on vacation, like every third week, we just have to go.
That's true. This is true.
I kid. Today we're talking about a recent Gallup poll that just came out in late March, maybe early April, that a lot of folks have been talking about. I'll summarize the data. It's actually pretty simple data. This is from NPR.org. A new Gallup poll published Monday indicates that religious membership in the U.S. has fallen to just 47%, representing less than half of the adult population for the first time since Gallup began asking the question more than 80 years ago. So anytime somebody's been researching something for 80 years and there's a new trend, that's important. And this is a demographic trend in America, and it relates to church membership. And so it certainly connects to those of us around the table and the audience of this podcast, right? We're people who care about the flourishing of the church. We're people who care about the sort of trends in America when it comes to religious interest. And so this is a significant statistic. So basically, when the survey began in 1937, 73% of U.S. adults belonged to a church, synagogue, or mosque. That number stayed pretty consistent for decades. So as recently as 1999, 70% of people polled said they belonged to a church, synagogue, or mosque. So notice the language is "do you belong to," and that obviously can mean whatever the listener interprets it to mean. So there, the article is phrased in terms of church membership, but depending on how your church practices membership and what you understand that to mean, you know, who knows what this means. But it's basically they're calling people on the phone and saying, "Hey, Bethany, do you belong to a church, synagogue, or mosque?" And so if you would answer that question yes, they say, "Cool, you're a member of a religious community." And if you would answer that question, "No, I do not belong to a church, synagogue, or mosque," then they're counting you as a no. Anyways, as recently as 1999, that figure was 70% of U.S. adults. It's now 47%, which is a significant decline in only 20 years. And so there's a lot of analysis being applied to this in terms of, hey, what does this mean? What's shifting here? How should we interpret this data? Obviously, there's always the data, and then there's what interpretation you place on the data. And so Gallup has done a good job here giving us some data, some sociological data that says something about what's happening in America. You're listening to the Wednesday Conversation because we're going to interpret the data for you. And that's what's really more exciting, isn't it, gentlemen? So that's what we want to talk about. I'm interested, before we dive into what I want to do, is I also pulled off the Gospel Coalition Thomas Kidd's analysis of this stat. So Thomas Kidd is a professor at Baylor University that we've referenced before. He's often a good, wise voice on some of these sociological trends. And so I'm going to read in a minute kind of how he parses the data and some of the observations he makes. But before we get to Thomas Kidd, what do you guys make of the data around the table?
I just want to know who answers their phone and talks to somebody on it that they don't know and answers a random survey, because I don't. Seriously. And I don't know anybody that would.
Who are these people?
I want a Gallup poll on how many people actually answer their phone and answer their questions.
It's actually, Thomas Kidd mentions that in his article. He says back in the days of landlines, the response rate was like 85% for polling, which is like, yeah, if you don't have an answering machine, your phone rings, you're just going to, you know, if you don't have caller ID, you're going to pick it up. And sure. Now he says the average response rate is between 5% and 10%. So imagine how many phone calls Gallup had to make to get 6,000 people to answer this question. That's a lot of phone calls. And yes, who answers this? Mm-hmm. Someone who either is, maybe they're that person who just answers every phone call. There are still people like that.
Just who
waiting
are
for
you?
Someone to call. Someone's calling me. Hey, they're excited about that.
You all know somebody like that. He's just like, they just answer all the time. Doesn't matter who it is.
I don't understand.
I don't know
that.
This number, but let me talk to him.
I'm never excited when my phone rings. Never.
Do you think that skews the data to be more of an older demographic? Because I can't think of hardly anybody that's in their 20s that when they get a phone call from somebody that they don't know, they're going to answer them and answer their questions.
Well, it is interesting because there's a spread across, you know, they say there's baby boomers represented, there's Gen Xers represented, and there's even some Gen Z folks represented. So apparently they got a decent cross section of the population.
I don't buy it. But
you
okay.
think it's all crazy.
Well, I'm also just like, why are I would fill out this survey if it was emailed to me.
Yeah.
I would totally fill it out. Mm-hmm. But anyways, yeah. sorry.
But she doesn't answer the phone like when we call her.
Yeah, so. That's true.
Gallup says it compiled the survey from interviews of 6,117 randomly sampled adults in all 50 states. The interviews were conducted by telephone from 2018 to 2020. It took them 2 years to get 6,000 people to answer the phone. There you go.
750 million phone calls.
Man, give that guy a raise.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Bob, to answer your question, I wasn't surprised by the data. And maybe that's just because of my personality, or maybe that's because of the conversations I find myself in a lot, or maybe it's because of the kind of churches that we're trying to, you know, even the impetus to plant the church that we serve in, or Chris, your church, like we're trying to reach those kinds of people.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, yeah, of course the data is declining. I guess I wasn't surprised. Maybe it's because I'm glass half empty. I don't know.
Same. I really wasn't surprised by it. And largely because the social capital of belonging to a church just really isn't there anymore in our society. And so even if you wouldn't be quote unquote a committed Christian and you just kind of attend because of the social dynamics, what benefit is that to you really much anymore? And so as some of that social capital has been declining in the country, it would make sense that, belonging, whatever that means, would also be declining.
Here's a couple cross tabs. This is what they call it in polling. Catholics have seen the greatest decline with an 18-point drop in the past two decades, a 9-point decline for Protestants. Among Democrats, a 25% percentage point decline in church membership compared with a 12-point decline for Republicans and an 18-point drop for Independents. Declines were greater in the East, minus 25 percentage points, than in the South, minus 16, Midwest, minus 18, or West, minus 19. So it's interesting that the East is certainly more secular. More blue states tend to be more secular. But what's interesting is there's a significant drop everywhere. So this mm-hmm. isn't just like, oh yeah, this liberal New Englanders are not going to church anymore. It's like, no, I mean, if in the South there's a 16-point drop, that's a pretty significant part of the country that has a pretty well-established religious heritage of going to church. And it's also interesting to recognize they're asking about church, synagogue, or mosque. So this encompasses other religious traditions outside of Christianity. And it would just say, across the spectrum, as you said, Chris, there's probably less reason, there's less social capital attached to belonging to a religious congregation than there ever has been.
Probably should be noted as well, Kidd mentions this in his article, that this really isn't due to the pandemic either.
Right.
This was going on in 2018, 19. With the data. So it's not because of the pandemic.
Yes. Now, there's two ways to parse this data as a person who cares about the flourishing of the church. So as people who care about, man, we want to see people meaningfully connected to Christ and to his church. These things, of course, matter to us. So there's two ways to parse this data. Oh gosh, this is a crisis. Less and less people are religious in our country. And that just affects the sort of social climate that we do work in and that we live in, or a really positive way of spinning this of like, oh, this is great. I tend to fall more in the second camp of, oh, this is not telling us anything we didn't already know. And it's actually really good news for those of us who believe in the necessity of conversion, the power of the Holy Spirit, the centrality of the gospel in the church. I think this is a wonderful, wonderful trend that should make us happy. And that's actually the angle that Thomas Kidd takes. He says the overall picture of declining church membership should be of interest, but not of worry to Reformed and evangelical believers. Evangelicals have been at their best, such as during the First and Second Great Awakenings, when they had to work hard at drawing people into church with crystal clear proclamation of the gospel and with caring service to the needs of congregations. A lot of the decline has to do with the death of cultural Christianity in America. This development is of concern, of course, and may encourage increasingly prominent cultural roles for rabidly anti-Christian views. On the other hand, the death of cultural Christianity represents an opportunity for evangelical churches because much of so-called Christianity is really just a means to an end. I think he's right there. He's quoting Russell Moore there in that last quote, who argued that a lot of what makes up cultural Christianity is it's means to an end religion. It's what I really care about is family values, preserving sort of a way of life and a social fabric that matters to me. That's what my Christianity tends to be about. It's not about relationship with Jesus, a passionate commitment to the kingdom of God. And so if the declining cultural Christianity, it will mean that the world around us gets more and more secular. And I think it's interesting that Kidd points out it may encourage prominent cultural roles for rabidly anti-Christian views. I think you see more and more of that. You see less and less people are less and less concerned about expressing things that are rabidly anti-religious, anti-Christian, sort of like hostile toward people of faith. That's becoming more and more accepted and normal. But I don't think for churches that care about the gospel, this is much concern at all, because what is declining is nominal Christianity. People who are connected to a church primarily maybe because that's what people do in America, or there's some social capital attached to that. And I think what you're going to see is increasingly we're moving in a direction where the only reason for being connected to a church is because you actually believe the things that are being taught there and are committed to the people there. There's no reason to be connected to a church just because, you know, we like to go there on Christmas and Easter and it makes us feel good. I mean, that's what's going away, it seems to me, in these statistics.
And in our part of the country, especially right now in the spring, I can be connected to a bunch of different places as things on the heels of the pandemic are opening up. I can go back to the country club, youth sports. I can belong a lot of places.
Yeah. So I'm curious too about this, what's causing people to leave. And so you highlighted, Bob, the cultural Christianity it's a means to an end. And so we can find that means to an end somewhere else. And so why are now people looking to other things? And I think the other question I have, because it could be very easy to assume that some of this departure has to do with the failures of the church, like the moral failures of the church.
Yes, very much.
And how much of that is in play here versus just this sort of, hey, my heart, my allegiance, my loyalty is kind of just drifted to these other things. They play a more prominent role and I've kind of just sort of drifted away from the church versus this, the church is corrupt. Look at all the junk that's happening in the church. I'm leaving, and sort of this defiant, you know, good riddance kind of attitude. Obviously, that, you know, that data is complicated and nuanced, but those are also questions that I have, is this departure, this exodus, in what ways are people leaving, and then how does that affect the way that we are now speaking to the culture and trying to, you know, talk about the church and build the church and those types of things.
So what's your answer to your own question?
I don't know. If I were to, and admittedly, I haven't dove into the numbers. I haven't, you know, done a lot of study here. So this is just completely off the cuff. I would assume on the ground, it has to do more with, there are just other communities that are better means to the end in my mind. But in the media, sort of what gets blasted is the church is a morally corrupt institution and everybody should abandon it.
Well, I think in the media, what gets connected is the connection this has to the nuns, right? Which is U.S. census data going all the way back to 2010 that shows the proportion of the population who claims no religious affiliation is clearly growing. And so what people want to do when they see this data is to say, oh, the reason people are less connected to churches is because more and more people are secular. And this fits what James K. Smith calls a subtraction story, right? Where it's like, hey, as people get more and more enlightened, as they get more and more educated, they become less and less religious because, of course, the world is progressing away from superstition and myth and religious stuff and into a world of enlightened, progressive, humanistic ideals. And so it's interesting to see that every time data like this comes out, there's always an angle like that in most of the major news outlets, which is what happened with this data. It's like, hey, guess what? Here's why this is happening. Less and less people are religious. I think that's probably an overly simplistic reading of the data, which is what I want to argue.
Travis, you're nodding around over there. Well, you're the youngest dude at the table. I'm curious.
Yeah, the 70s were a long time ago for you. So what's the...
Well, I just wanted to clarify that when you said nuns, I first thought you meant nuns. And I was a little confused
Not priests and nuns.
All the nuns are leaving.
I was a little confused for a little bit. No, one of the things that I think is really interesting about this article is that it's about the church in America, which sometimes I feel like we can just kind of assume, okay, well, that's like, you know, setting the pace for the whole world. And
that's
therefore,
it's a global trend, which it's not.
Exactly. Exactly. I was just listening to Tim Keller, and he was talking about how even though in pockets of the world, secularism is on the incline, religion globally is actually on an incline. If not just because religious people tend to have more kids, religious people are really, really like Muslims, Christians are in the religion is evangelized, spread. And so like, I don't know, I can imagine a lot of people hearing this and thinking like, oh, okay, this is like Christianity is now going to be a minority in the world. This is the decline. This is the end of it. But that's not actually the story of the global world.
Right. And that's the important, that's an important way of assigning meaning to this, because if the meaning we assign to this is, oh gosh, Christianity is on the decline. Nobody cares anymore about religion. The world's going to hell in a handbasket. The culture war is lost, blah, blah. That's a very narrow reading of the data. When we lay a global narrative over this, as Keller is really good at doing, he would say, hey, actually, this is only true in the most Western postmodern cultures in the world, in Africa, in Asia, and in South America, religion is exploding. So globally, the trend is in the opposite direction. And so that's interesting when you start asking the question, why? And when you start thinking about, well, what does this mean for how we should respond to this data? This is why I think we should be very heartened by this data, because the world is becoming more and more religious. The United States is becoming less and less connected to the institutional church. And so I think there's great opportunity here for us to ask the question, okay, what does it mean for us to do mission in a post-Christian, post-churched society at a time when across the globe, more and more people are finding their way into the church, capital C.
Here's some other thoughts that go through my mind. So you think about nominal Christianity and the cultural Christianity. In some ways, the drift of our culture killed it for us. But if you think about it the other way, for a long time, the church in the United States was such that nominal Christianity could survive and even thrive. So in some ways, do we need to think about, hey, we don't ever want to go back there.
Why did we prop that up?
Yeah. I mean, is that part of the response of, hey, in some ways, this is a gift of God. The culture killed it for us. Let's not try to resurrect that zombie and walk around with, because I think sometimes that is, especially if this gets couched in the language of culture war, that sort of is what happens, is we end up trying to resurrect that zombie. And it's like, what, we want to return to nominal Christianity? Now, conversely, and I think this is a fair question to ask. Yeah, nominal Christianity is not good. But if you think about some of the common grace good of that, is that better than a more secular culture? That's another interesting question I've seen.
Seems like the jury is out on that to me, because I don't know. There's probably ways in which it's better and ways in which it's worse.
Seems like we're living in that moment right now. And we're going to find out, or our kids will find out. The next couple of generations will find out.
Well, and one of the things Kidd points out in one of his paragraphs is church attendance on balance as a common grace good leads to better outcomes in gauges of human flourishing, such as family stability, supportive friendships, charitable giving, service, and so on. So what he's saying is, apart from sort of the conversionist aspects of this, it is true that for a long time in America, asking, are you a member of a local church, said something about the stability of your family, about your level of sort of charitable giving and sacrifice and serving others and volunteerism, all those things correlated. And so the question is, if church membership is going away, and really membership in institutions in general is going away, that's the whole premise of the book Bowling Alone that Robert Putnam wrote 20 years ago, is just like, hey, people used to go to bowling leagues and they don't do that anymore, you know? And so if our overall connectedness to one another in social fabric kind of institutions is going away, what will that mean for stability of the family, for the good of kids, for the connectedness of human beings to one another? You know, that's what's unknown right now. And so who knows what the sort of implications of that will be 20 years from now.
To also connect this to some of the stuff we were talking about with Carl Truman's book, you think of decades past where there was much more of a nominal Christianity. You didn't have some of the, current gender craziness and confusion going on. So is that an argument for some of the cultural benefit of a nominal Christianity existing? Again, I don't have a definitive answer to that. These are just some interesting questions to me when you start to debate and wrestle through both the potential pros and cons of a culture that has a stronger nominal Christianity in it, and the ways that sort of has shaped certain laws and certain cultural assumptions, for better, for worse. So because I think there would be those that would argue, they would say, hey, not that we want people to be nominal Christians, but that is actually a better world than where it seems we're heading right now. And I don't think that's arguments entirely without merit, but at the same time, I do have certain questions about, is it just more comfortable for you?
I think I'm one of those people who would say it is better, but not better in a, in a moral way. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just saying, I don't know if this is better for the mission of God. I think the kingdom of God might thrive in a very post-Christian world.
Yes, yes.
But I do think, if I think about what's good for the kids in my neighborhood, right? Well, man, it's good for them to have a mom and a dad. It's good for them to have clarity on their identity as a human being. It's good for them to have a stable educational environment and a city that works. And all of those things, many of those things that we take for granted in the West are very much the heritage of nominal Christianity, right?
Yeah.
That in fact, there are many scholars who have pointed this out, that if you look at, and this is, it's a daring claim to make, but it's borne out by the facts. If you look at the places where human rights have gained the most ground, where sort of religious liberty has gained the most ground, where basic human flourishing has gained the most traction, it's in places that are Christianized, because the Christian gospel brought with it a sense of human dignity, a sense of the image of God, right? These are a heritage of much of the Christian faith that has, of course, been corrupted and polluted, and right, we haven't always lived up to our ideals. But there is a sense in which much of what we take for granted in our culture is a heritage, much of it, of sort of the influence of Christianity throughout a culture. And that's not going to be, you know, that's going to be less and less the case. And so it's an open question, what will replace that? What's our common bond if it's not some of those taken for granted assumptions that were handed to us by centuries of Christian influence? Well, then what is it? And that's the unknown.
Bob, I feel like this is like a broader application of something you hit on a lot, which is just like the practical benefit of obedience to God, of like, obviously my first and foremost desire is that you are obedient for the right reasons, because of the love for the Lord and all these different things. But at the very least, I want you to be obedient. Like, even if you're obedient for the wrong reasons, I'm like, obedience brings blessing. And that's especially in the case of like individual, but like I think we're seeing it now on a societal level is what kind of what you're talking about is like, yes, I want the society to be actually transformed by the gospel. But if not that, like at least just holding the values of humans have dignity and we should actually protect the innocent, things like that. It's like, even if you're not following Christ, if you're following those things, your society is probably going to thrive in a much better way than if you didn't do those things.
Right. So in one of the interesting trends that will be interesting to see how it plays out going forward is membership in a religious congregation. It at least connects me to some kind of community in a very individualistic world. If you take away membership in a religious congregation, even if it's a nominal religiosity that's just from social benefit, and now I'm living in a world of unrestrained individualism that's deepened by social media, by, you know, all kinds of things, where does that leave us? I think it takes us in a place that's a little more isolated and alone, and that has effect for things like mental health and human flourishing. So I think there's a big downside possibly to sort of the cultural effects of this. But I guess what I want to argue, though, is I think there's a great upside for the proclamation of the gospel, because I just think there's less. It used to be that when we proclaimed the gospel, we also had to explain how we're not saying just come to church. We're saying trust in Jesus, right? And it used to take a lot of work to sort of parse that out sometimes for people who came from a very religious heritage, and they just assumed, hey man, you're asking me to go to church and be a certain kind of person. No, I'm asking you to repent of your sin and follow Jesus, right? Those are different things. I think now there might be a great opportunity to say, hey, there, the ground is cleared a little bit for the proclamation of the gospel, because ain't no one joining your church just because they think it's neat to be part of a church. It's like, if they're not
bored,
if they're not there because they're convicted by the truth of what you're saying, they're probably not there, or less and less they are.
And one of the benefits of being able to trace sort of historical trends and patterns is you see the fruit of a particular model of discipleship over time. And so if the fruit of the American church over the past 20 some years has been a decline in discipling committed people, that it should cause us to consider, okay, how are we trying to make disciples? How are we pushing spiritual formation so that people are part of the community because they're loyal to Jesus and loyal to his people, versus kind of the other trappings that sort of latched on over the decades. And so for us to be able to take a good, honest look at how we are making disciples and say, hey, we want to go deep, and let's talk about spiritual formation and all that involves. Like you said, Bob, great opportunity for that. And in a ways that we don't want to resurrect that corpse of nominal Christianity.
This connects to a topic we've teed up for next week's podcast, which sort of talks about the connection between social media and technology and our disconnectedness from things like church. And so I think these two conversations sort of map onto each other. So listeners, you can come back next week to hear us take the conversation forward in a different but related direction. And until then, find something else to take up your earbuds. We'll see you next week.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We always love to hear from listeners, so if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.